This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to the after show. This week, we've got some really good stuff to talk about. But before we get into everything, we just got word that John Meadows, previous guest of the podcast, all-around amazing human, we're very fortunate to get to do this one in person with John, has had a heart attack. He is recovering in hospital. That's all the details that we know. We don't know anything else outside of that. So we just wanted to send John all our best wishes from us and obviously from all of the fans that enjoyed his episode. So yeah, John, we hope you're okay and you're resting up and yeah, hopefully getting through this tough time. So yeah, a lot of cool stuff happened on last week. First thing, Elon Musk went back on Joe Rogan. Obviously, he absolutely lost his shit on Twitter during the week, and I think he had some explaining to do. He felt like he wanted to come on Rogan's show and not really explain himself as much as he just wanted to be like, hey, this is who I am and just get used to it.
And he also had a child like 3 days before.
Yeah. the UFC was on as well, which was, you know, we're not going to get into the event itself because it's not an MMA podcast, even though, you know, an MMA segment, Raph, would be fantastic. But, you know, I think it's the second professional sporting organization that has opened since the lockdown.
Yeah.
I think
it's been no sport.
Yeah, I think Korean baseball was the other one. And then...
In Korea,
yeah.
No, that's not going to satisfy my sporting edge, unfortunately.
Not North Korean baseball, South Korean baseball league. And yeah, the UFC. So yeah, it was pretty interesting. I watched the event and they actually had an event before that, UFC Brazil. And it was similar. It was like an empty stadium.
In Brazil.
Yeah, it was an empty stadium, but they didn't have, like, they had all the masks and stuff. So the dudes were in the ring.
Wait, they fought with masks?
No.
Oh my God.
Like, the ref didn't have a mask and, like, the fighters didn't have a mask, but their corner did. So they would come into the ring with a mask on. And I just sort of thought, I guess it's like a gesture of, like, hey, we're like protecting ourselves, but everyone surely knows, you know, if you're jumping into the ring with a sweaty fighter and stuff and you're like giving him commands and stuff, it doesn't matter. If he's got COVID, you're getting COVID. Yeah.
You know? And there's 5G in the building anyway, so what difference? You know, even in talking to one of our coaches in Czech Republic, the masks are mandatory.
Mm.
So people have been having to like go to like gyms and like CrossFit gyms and all that stuff wearing the mask. Everyone wearing the mask.
Right.
During the workout.
Oh, really?
Like, you can't, it's illegal to take it off.
What type of mask, though? Does it have
just
to
like
be
a face mask? Anything. Yeah, you just have to wear a face mask in public.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, with the conspiracy theories, so I got, one of my friends was sending me David Icke. I don't know if you've heard of David Icke. He was like a famous UK entertainer for a while. I think he's like an actor.
Yeah, he went on London Real.
Yeah. Did you hear about all this?
I saw that he's obviously spilling some not very evidence-based communications. And London Real had him on, and then because of that, like the episode got shut down, and I saw he's like got thrown off LinkedIn.
Oh, okay. I don't know about he got taken off YouTube.
Yeah, so he got taken down there, but then like Brian Rose's account on LinkedIn, which is like, you know, he spent years building up, he's connected to it, they deleted it in an instant just because of the association.
Really? Wow. Well, look, so I got sent that video, and you know, I'm not a big one for conspiracy theories, just largely because ultimately, at the end of the day, they're just a huge waste of time. They're fun and they're entertaining, but if you take them too seriously, they are just a massive waste of time. You know, part of that experience is just what, or that sentiment is just from what I heard from Joe Rogan. You know, he explains that he spent a lot of time, you know, in his 20s and 30s on conspiracy theories. A lot of time, you know, lots of nights and weeks and research and this and that, discussions and stuff. And he goes, look, you do it for a number of years and then eventually you get to a point and you realize like this is all for nothing. Like, it doesn't actually change my life. And if anything, it's just taking away from my life. I'm just spending time worrying about things that are never going to affect me.
And almost never they're correct. Like, you know, very occasionally one might turn out to be true, but so rarely.
It's just really just another form of entertainment. That's all it is. But then anyway, I'm reading I'm watching this podcast that got pulled off the air. So they've got this whole thing. It's like, hey, we were pulled off YouTube and that violates our right for free speech and blah, blah, blah. So we've created our own digital platform, streaming platform. And now it's like, you know, freedom to the press or whatever. And obviously there's a lot of, you know, Elon was talking about this a little bit, you know, their rights and, you know, the liberties, the, what do they call it? The freedom of... Not freedom of speech, freedom of... anyway.
We're Australian.
Yeah, so they're Elon was saying, you know, you're taking away our civil liberties. Mm. You know, we can't go outside. You're telling us to lock down. It should always be optional. We can do what we want. And, you know,
He thought that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was very open about it. He's like, you know, if people have the right to leave their house if they want to, like it's... And he's saying, you know, we're moving towards fascism and all this really extreme stuff. And it was obviously, you know, huge claims. But, you know, it brings up an interesting conversation because I was listening to this David Icke talk about sort of similar things. And then obviously he gets in... So this guy's whole idea is, you know, he thinks the world is run by these lizard people and they control everything and stuff. And, you know, the fucked up thing is that like tens of millions of people believe this guy and they follow his stuff. And the problem with all conspiracy theory thinking is that most of the people that fall for it, what they don't have, and really the people creating it as well, is they don't have a fundamental understanding of basic objective facts and a basic understanding of kind of the things that the societal engines that just kind of run the world. So if you're going to go out there and make conspiracy theory claims about the economy, for example, what do you contrast them up against? So when someone gives me opinion, this is basically the scientific method, right? Someone gives you presents you a piece of information or a theory, hypothesis for something, which is what a conspiracy theory is. I believe, you know, this, caused this, and this is the result. Then you have to have something to test it against. Mm. You have to have something to contrast it against. You can't just take it for fact. On, you know, if someone goes, you know, I think lightweights builds muscle. You go, okay, we're going to have to test that against other things like heavyweights and medium weights and non-weights. You have to have all these things, but you have to understand the testing parameters. You have to have a basic understanding of the body and all these different things, right? And so when someone goes and makes a claim like this David Icke guy, for example, I'm just using this, you know, just to give you guys a general understanding that, you know, if the reason that they're locking us all down is so that they're progressively taking away our freedom so that eventually we get used to being locked down and they can control us and they take away, he's like, you know, small business gives us freedom. And if we shut down small business, then as a result, we can control the people by controlling their income and they have to do what we say and it will become like communism. Mm. And I'm like, okay, well, clearly David Icke and the people listening to this don't have a fundamental understanding of how the economy works and how an economy runs, you know? And so, you know, if you know anything about how an economy runs is you need small business to make, like you have to, small business creates production, which, you know, creates products and services, which, you know, make society grow and make people prosper and puts food on the table and builds houses and puts roofs over our heads. If an entire government shut that entire thing down, the whole country would die. They're going to absolute ruin. And so that's obviously not what those people want. So the problem when people present us information like this is they don't have a fundamental understanding of the thing that they're contrasting it against. And so it doesn't make sense. Like, for example, another one is he says 5G causes COVID. Okay, this is why this doesn't work. It's because people haven't gone and looked at a global map of where 5G is and where COVID is. If it was really causing that, because he said something like, the 5G frequency shrinks oxygen molecules, which is why people are having a hard time breathing and they're getting high altitude symptoms. 5G is not in every country. 5G is not even in Australia. So how the fuck is COVID in every country in the world? But 5G is not. So just basic stuff like that. You know, once you see the flaw in the logic for many of these things, generally, it goes for all of these things. Not necessarily, but you can poke holes in it pretty quickly.
Yeah, and exactly. What's most frustrating is that, you know, the answers to this stuff never comes out from people that don't know much about it. So, like, it's you know, it's going to come from another virologist. If I always look at health and fitness, and it's, you know, we have made mistakes in health and fitness, right? There was a time where we're like, hey, these fats are, like, really, really bad. And people like to point out, but look how wrong, like, all the doctors and everything had it. But it wasn't like some bro PT was like, you know what, dude, I worked out, eggs are good for you. I've been frying them up in my kitchen, feeding my mates, and it's good. It was actually just other doctors and new scientists who got it right. So it's never going to be some random dude on a podcast that doesn't know much about it. It's always just going to be like another expert that proves the other one's wrong.
Yeah.
So as soon as someone has got this like unbelievably crazy theory, you know it's literally a complete waste of time. Because even if he's right, he can't prove to you it's right.
Yeah.
And it's going to be some other expert that you, if you're into conspiracy theories, you probably don't like in the first place, who's going to come out with the right answer.
Yeah. And also, this guy has dedicated his life to conspiracy theories because that's how he makes money.
Yeah. That's the real conspiracy here.
I mean, he has like 30 books and he sells books. And if he gets more people believing in conspiracy theories, he makes more money. And also think about this guy. He's a human. He has an ego, right? He wants to be the number. He wants to be the guy that everyone's like, you were right. He wants. It feels fucking good to have 10 million views of your content. And so the more controversial he is, the more polarizing he is, the more people absolutely fall in love with him, like he's some messiah cult leader with all the answers. That feeds into his ego.
And
it feeds into his fucking bank account as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Like, he's the winner, and the real loser are just the people, everyday people that believe him.
Yeah.
And just get things totally wrong and either like end up with COVID because they were just turning off the Wi-Fi in their house instead of taking actual precautions. Or just, you know, just honestly embarrass themselves and just spend a large portion of their time and resources on something totally wrong.
Yeah.
That happens in all sorts of different domains.
And I'd say the other thing that you just need to be aware of, like last thing on this conspiracy theory point, is what it does is it creates a... So, in human psychology, there's confirmation bias, right? Everyone has heard this term before or they're familiar with it. And basically, what confirmation bias is it's just that you have a certain set of beliefs, which are your personal truths and your political truths. And you lean towards those truths at all time. And anything that doesn't support those truths, you think is wrong. And so there's, Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, he's like one of the smartest men in the world. He helps us to understand that, hey, no matter what your personal truths are, no matter what your political truths are, it doesn't change the fact of objective truths. So whether you believe in gravity or not, if you jump out of a plane, that's just going to pull you down and kill you, right? So the whole point with, these conspiracy theories and, understanding these things, you know, going forward in the future is that if you believe more and more of these conspiracy theories, what they do is they're the alternative to the mainstream. So that's the bias that you take to all these things. So generally what happens is eventually you don't realize it, but over time, if you believe more and more of these things, and if it goes unchecked, you create a confirmation bias towards the mainstream media is wrong and anything they tell me is wrong. And so the next pandemic comes out, the next thing that comes out, and you immediately think it's wrong and you immediately look for the next thing. And what you miss is you miss the objective truth. You miss that. And I was having a discussion about this with a friend on the weekend. You miss the fact that companies like the New York Times, they as big as they are for a reason, it's proper journalism. Like, they have to actually go to tertiary education, they have to go to university, they have to qualify, they have to get hired by these people, they have to put out information, they have to fact check, they have to research, you know, to put out a piece. People have to check that. People have to fact check what's in it before they put it out. It's a real business. When David Icke, the Messiah blogger, no one fact checks him. No one questions him. He didn't have to do any sort of research. He can just make up fucking stories. He can just make up fiction and put it out there and say that it's truth. And no one checks him on that. And so I think people start to miss that as well. And they start to miss what actually goes into making a publication like the New York Times, It's totally different to the information that a guy like a book that David Icke can just put out. So giving them equal weighting or giving alternative truths more weighting that aren't true, but now just confirm your bias is fucking dangerous information. It's a dangerous way of thinking and it needs to go checked. Anyway.
Speaking of conspiracies. So, I've heard Thor's world record of 500 more kilos was fake plates. Did look very easy.
Yeah. Man, it was fun. It was like the way, how difficult Eddie Hall's 500 kilos made you think that it's going to be a long time before anyone can even come close to that. And when he ripped that 501, man, I reckon he could have done two reps.
Yeah. It was, yeah. It went up. And I know these guys are fast food, so it goes up quickly.
Yeah.
But it went up quickly.
Way faster than Eddie, though.
Yeah.
Eddie was
in hospital after
it. Eddie was bleeding
it.
Out of the nose and the eyes after it finished. Thor walked off and he was like, yeah.
Well, I was thinking, so I was looking at his body weight. His body weight...
He's way bigger, right?
Way bigger. He's 205 kilos.
How big was Eddie when he pulled it?
I remember from the documentary, I think I want to say he's like around 170 to 180.
He's way taller, Thor.
Yeah, well. He's got like nearly a foot on him.
Yeah.
Eddie Hall is listed at 164.
Wow.
So, nearly 40 kilos difference. And that's a lot.
That's heaps. That's a lot. That's like 40 kilos of muscle?
Well, I think Eddie Hall had plenty of muscle. It's probably more 40 kilos of like... Yeah, it's muscle, but...
Yeah, muscle his and bone taller, right? And... Yeah. Fuck. He's such a big human. Man, you know, the first thing I thought when I watched him pull that 501 was like, he should have done more.
Yeah.
Load up. Seriously, load that shit up. Go 520. Because that's the worst thing you could ever do is beat a record by something you know you could have beat it by more than, and then like the next year someone beats it and you're like, fuck, I could have put so much more distance between me and that record.
Yeah.
I mean, how many humans get born every day that are as big as Thor that can lift that much weight? Like, man, one in every like 100 years, you know?
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, often when you see these guys when they retire, is so often as well, because they're at such a high level, even though maybe he had 520 in the bank that day, where it seems like he's full beast mode, he might never lift more again. Because injuries and your weight like competitions and
totally.
Often,
peaking.
Yeah, often you're just never in that shape again.
Yeah.
And they'll look back. It's like, I'm listening to the Ronnie Coleman documentary. And he's like, man, when I hit like 5 reps at 100 pounds, which is crazy.
Crazy.
So it wasn't two. So it wasn't five. I think it was 2 reps.
At 800 pounds
at squat. At 800 pounds squat. Like bodybuilder squats. And he's like, my biggest regret is I should have done a set of five. Yeah. And you could tell he easily could have done a set of five, but it's just the way it is, right? Like, I think straight after that, he had like crazy back injury and knee injury. Like, he never got back to that again.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that was like my, when I pulled my 500 pound deadlift and I had way more in the tank. But at the time, I was like, oh, mid deadlift cycle. Like, I wasn't even supposed to peak today. It's all good. I'm going to like, and then like, I don't know, something happened and I couldn't train that week and then it fell off and then I got an injury and then the back happened. And it's like, and then I never did another strength cycle for deadlift ever without back pain.
And sore back. And it's so often what happens.
Yeah. And so it's like, sometimes you got to make hay while the sun shines. So,
anyway, he's 501 kilos, crazy. And now he's going to have a boxing match. Is it boxing?
Yeah. They're going to have an MMA fight. I don't want to see.
Oh, it's an MMA fight. Not boxing.
No, I think it's an MMA fight.
They should have a thing now, which is like,
honestly retarded.
Anytime there is like a big sporting rivalry, you just end up picking a random like martial art and competing. So it's like, okay, LeBron and Michael Jordan, you guys are going to fight.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter the age difference, anything.
You know, it made me, as soon as I saw that announcement, it just reminded me of UFC 1. Have you ever watched UFC 1?
Oh, like the massive fat guy versus like the...
The first one was a kickboxer versus a sumo wrestler.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And the sumo, right, he pushes him over, he like kind of punches him and kicks him. The sumo's like, oh fuck, I'm getting striked, like goes down to the cage, goes to get up, and the kickboxing guy like soccer kicks him in the face. And you know what the funny part is, right, is... They're watching it and packed crowd. And, you know, at the time, there's no good, like, best practices for the ref. They don't really know when to stop it or not. And some of these fights, holy shit, dude, the guy's like on the ground getting like kicked in the head. Like he's limp, his body's limp. The guy's just kicking him in the face, right? And the ref doesn't know when to jump in. Like the trainer had to throw in the towel and jump over the cage and push the guy off. And because they didn't know about tapping back then, right? Yeah. Because the refs had never had experience with jiu-jitsu. So, in one of the fights, Hoist... I love how we said... we're not going to turn this into an MMA podcast. I'll finish the point here. He's choking the guy out. And he taps. And then... But the ref doesn't know what a tap is. The ref doesn't know that like... Oh, that's like the end of a fight.
I feel like there should have been a briefing for this.
Yeah. So, then the guy lets go. And then they keep fighting. And the guy's like, what the fuck? He tapped. And then in the next fight, right... He gets this guy in a choke and the guy is tapping and he doesn't let go of the choke, right? He's got the choke on and he's squeezing hard. The guy's like tapping with both hands, like flapping his wings. And the ref's like, okay. And he's choking the guy. The guy's tapping and he's talking to the ref. He's like, have I won the fight? And the ref's like, he's like, I'm winning. Okay, this is done, right? When I let go of this guy, it's done. And he's like looking at the guy. He's like, you're done, right? When I get off you. And let's go. And then the guy's like, fuck, thank God I almost passed out. And the other dude's trainer runs in and pushes him. And then they get into a scuffle again. And then the ref just grabs his hand and raises his hand. Like, it's just chaos. Like, you can just tell that it, like, no one knew what the fuck was going on. Like, it was a full experiment. It was really, like, a real experiment, right?
Who do you think's going to win out of Thor and Eddie Hall?
Man, if it goes past, like, 30 seconds, I fear for both of them.
Well, I think Eddie Hall clearly has a better aerobic fitness because he's got like a swimming background, and I think he was just generally stronger in Strongest Man, like at the more endurance events.
But he's carrying a lot more body fat.
Who is Eddie? Yeah. Eddie is.
So I reckon he's been like less healthy.
And Thor, I don't know how much this is going to matter. Has a much longer reach.
Boxing, that matters.
If they're boxing, I think that'll matter.
But none of that seems to matter too much when you don't really know how to use it because you can't fight.
So I think it's going to be, they're going to be so tired. That's my real prediction. Mm. They're both going to be exhausted.
Mm. Look, I'll watch it for entertainment value, but fuck, I'm honestly not expecting much. All right, cool. Before we get to the listener questions, you guys had given us some great feedback. Obviously, this is the second week that people have been going through the dumbbell program. Some great feedback about the app. We just really decided that, you know, if we're going to give you guys a program in the future to use and more future programs, we want to deliver it in, you know, a third-party software just so it was a great place to... The worst part about getting a program in a PDF or an Excel sheet, which we've done before, is it's just hard to use when you're going around the gym. And so we wanted to just have it in your phone so that you can look at it really easily and you can enter the scores as you go. So yeah, we've got it in a third-party app that you guys can use. So yeah, if you head to themindmuscleproject.com/programs, you can see all of our programs in there. So all our bench boosters, deadlift boosters, squat boosters, and our new dumbbell programs for male and female. So yeah, all you need is a pair of dumbbells. I think it's a really good program to have in your back pocket. You've got it for life after that. And yeah, you got strength work, you got conditioning work in there, and you know, obviously it's super minimal equipment. So it's great tools. If you're a PT, you know, if you coach people as well, in the park or whatever, I think it's probably just a great tool with so many different exercises you've probably never done before or never properly programmed before that you guys can have in there and check out and use for your own clients as well. So check that out at themindmuscleproject.com/programs.
Awesome. And also brought to you today is True Protein. So this is what is getting me through my isolation in terms of actually having something I look forward to eat every single day because I'm stuck eating home food all day. My favorite protein is the chocolate vegan protein powder, which really? I truly think is the best tasting protein from the company which has the best tasting protein powder.
I can't believe you just said a vegan product's your favorite. I don't know if I know you anymore.
I don't know how it happened.
Ever since you became a dad, you just turned. You just turned on me. Yeah. So, you know, actually funny about you mentioned your protein being the favorite. I was thinking about, because we're working with Brad from our coach for nutrition, and we're setting the 200 grams of protein a day because he's like, are you hitting 200 grams of protein? I'm like, yeah, man. He's like, all right, we'll track it. And I tracked it one day and I hit like 140.
That's a disaster.
And so I'm like, God, my intuitive level of protein has dropped dramatically. So I've been trying to get it up to 200. Honestly, dude, you cannot get to 200 grams of protein every single day without protein powder.
Yeah.
It just can't be done. It is, and I was thinking to myself, it is the most essential protein that there is on the market. In your diet. But oh, it's funny because they've got the whey protein and the nighttime protein.
Yeah.
And the nighttime protein, now I don't know if you remember this, back in the day, anyone listening to this, it's, you know, been a gym junkie for a long time. This is well before there were brands like True Protein. When you put protein in a shaker and other products, like even like creatine and like ZMA, like all these other from other brands, you have to shake real hard. You definitely need the spring in there, the metal spring.
Absolutely.
And you would shake the shit out of it. Because if you didn't, you get the chunks and the chunks are gross, right? And like with True, you don't do that anymore. No. But they do have the nighttime product. It's what's the protein? The nighttime protein? What's it called?
Casein.
Casein. Casein's
slower release.
Yeah, it's like thicker, so it does need more shaking. So I'm shaking the shit out of the shaker so hard. I hear in the background, Ev's like, wow, really giving that protein a shake. And it occurred to me like, fuck, I have not shaken a protein shaker like this since probably I started lifting like 11 years ago because their products just blend so easily. You don't really need to shake them.
It's a blast from the past.
You just like stir them, you know, and they mix. But yeah, those days are gone.
Yeah.
Those days, like, that's the old protein supplement.
You would drop it into a drink, you would stir it, and it was dry.
Yeah.
Like it would go down into the drink, resurface to the top, dry. It was magical.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. It's very different. TrueProtein.com.au. Yeah. MindMuscle10 when you check out, you guys get 10% off. All right. First listener question this week.
Okay. It's a good one. I think a lot of people listening might be in this boat. So it's Cat Violet Fitness. Now, it is a very long question, but the crux of it is she's just like a lower income earner because she's a student. I think she's training. Yeah, she's starting to become a doctor. So she's just not earning a full-time income, which is how I was when I was starting training. So she can't afford to join an expensive gym, like a one-on-one gym or, you know, a high-touch service gym. But also she's saying a lot of the commercial gyms are dying or not reopening because of this whole COVID thing and they're just closed. So what is the best option for somebody really in that category that can't afford, she says, to join a gym like the ones we run, but commercial fitness may just be closed or just like not really safe to go back to as well. Is it investing in a home gym or just dropping training?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I actually think about this a lot. You know, someone in this basket is my parents. They can afford to go to an expensive gym, but they don't want to. So they're choosing to, and they don't really want to go back to commercial fitness for health reasons, you know, and that's completely understandable. And so, yeah, the best option is a home gym. You know, I think that, naturally I wouldn't have said home gym until I saw the entire planet start training at home and until we wrote the at-home dumbbell program, you know, and it was, you know, my coaches that, you know, helped me to understand how good of a program you can possibly do with just a set of dumbbells. And, you know, it just made me think, okay, there will be some sacrifice if you can't go to a gym. You know, you're probably not going to get that pendulum squat machine that you really wanted or, you know, the hamstring curl or whatever. But, you know, at the end of the day, now it's just a time to be resourceful. And I think everyone's proved to themselves over the 6 to 8 weeks that, hey, you can maintain, you know, your muscle mass. You can like make some progress in some body weight strength stuff. You can keep your training fun. It's not the same as a gym. I get it. It's going to be different. We just have to accept that. But yeah, I think that the best investment you can make right now is just chipping away at home gym.
Yeah, home gym equipment. I think I've done it for years. It's easy to look at what you don't have in a home gym. Like, yeah, you don't have a pendulum squat. Right. You don't have a Smith
machine. Good point,
yeah. But what you forget is how much you gain. You can get so much more work done because you don't have to travel to the gym. You have to like scan, drop your bag, put it in the locker, wait for lat pull downs, do this, queue up for classes. Like, you save so much time that I actually think you get so much more training in and you make it to the gyms more often that you get better results very often, despite not having as much equipment.
Yeah.
And then the second piece is, I think people don't often do the maths on this. Yeah, it might be like $2,000 to set up your home gym. But if you just work out how much memberships and like other costs associated with going to a gym you save, after a year and a half, like you're even. You would have spent that on a gym membership, depending on what home gym route you
Well, the only thing I would say is that maybe she probably doesn't have that like a lump sum of cash to like just spend straight away. So
That is true. So, I mean, the route I went down when I set up my one is one piece at a time. Don't go on Instagram and look at like the epic home. Like, people have insane home gym setups. Yeah. They spend like $30,000 on it. You can start with a couple of $100 and you just like, cool, put away the money I would have put towards the gym membership and get my next piece of equipment. There will be insane bargains on Gumtree and Craigslist once everyone realizes they don't have the motivation to work out and they blew their money on home gym equipment during COVID-19.
Yeah.
I think there'll be some crazy bargains you can pick up and you just go one piece of equipment at a time. And I've seen so many people just build, awesome home gyms over like 4 years, just slowly picking up equipment.
Yep. And then you also find that you can get creative with some of your own equipment as well. Like, you don't have to buy nice equipment as well. You can just go to the like Home Depot store and buy like a big bag of sand or a big bag of cement or something and just play around with that. There are heaps of options that you can do. There's, you know, you might have a park with a pull-up bar near you and that sort of stuff. And there's just lots of alternatives. But I think you made a really good point, Raf, is that don't look at what you don't have, you know, look at what you have and what you can do with it. And things just aren't going to be perfect. Maybe not the story you initially thought would play out, but that's just the way it is. The sooner you accept that, the easier it will be to enjoy the training and the tools that you have.
Cool. Next question. I think this one is also really common at the moment. Bieltd. I've been training from home during the lockdown. My girlfriend has seen this and asked if I could train her. I have no PT experience, but have been training CrossFit 4 years and then 10 years as a national level swimmer. So I have experience. Do you have a program you would suggest I get her to follow? I have been writing a program and tried to apply things that I have learned on the podcast, but I could do with some more inspiration. Thanks.
Yeah, so it sounds like his girlfriend's like an absolute beginner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot of places that you could start from. But what I would say is the most important thing for any beginner, and this is obviously the process that we go through with new clients with us, is learning the skill first. Obviously, it's tempting as a beginner to feel like you've done a workout, to like, I want to go super hard and I want to just like sweat really hard and do this crazy exercise I saw on Instagram. But you know, if you're going to start an exercise journey, start it properly. And the most important thing is learning the skills of, you know, exercise. And, you know, these skills are the patterns of breathing and bracing. You know, that's an important thing. Learning how to brace, learning how to squat, learning how to hinge, learning how to press, learning how to pull, you know, all these different things, learning a bit about mobility, how to warm up, how to cool down, how to stretch. These sorts of things are more important in the beginning. You know, we always feel like we're in a rush to get to some end goal. But I made an email about this in my daily email. You know, that list has really grown. I think people are really enjoying these emails. But I talked about one of the concepts that is really important to understand. It's in Atomic Habits, the book. And it talks about the trajectory. So he says, I'm far less concerned about your results and I'm far more concerned about your trajectory. Mm-hmm. And essentially what I did was give the example of, you know, when I first started lifting weights when I was, 16, same with you, Raf, is there are like three main things that I started doing, which I knew that were important. And there were three things that were a part of, you know, a whole bunch of different things I've done over the years, but three things that have really stayed, and that's eating a lot of protein. So growing a big appetite for, you know, animal products and milk and all that sort of stuff and protein powders, sleeping 8 hours a night or sleeping as much as possible, and doing squats and deadlifts and presses
regularly,
at least once a week. And so these doing these three things for 11 years, you know, put on 29 kilos of muscle. You know, it's one of those things that the trajectory is very positive. And you know, if I was concerned about my results and I was always checking in on my results every single day, every single week, like people do over that 11 years, you know, it'd be pretty disheartening because, you know, progress is not linear. But the goal for everyone should be to stay on the trajectory. And so when people start exercising, their trajectory is completely off and their results are going to hit a floor very, very soon if they're not doing the fundamentals well. There's only so many shitty burpees, poor skipping, bad push-ups you can do before you just hit a wall and you just can't do, like, you can't make any progress. You can't get any more results. And then you have to rewind, you have to undo all the bad movement pattern, you have to learn a squat properly. So I would say it's a long way to go about saying, you know, learning the skills, learning the fundamentals first are the most important thing.
Yeah, so I think to apply it, I would say probably the best way to go about this would be to get a program, maybe like a dumbbell program or something similar based on what equipment she's got, and then just coach her the skills as she does the program. Because, you know, for a beginner, the actual program is probably not that important. It's probably just more like something you can be like, cool, let's just follow this. And then you won't get in fights about what to do every single time because you're just following a program. But then you can coach the skill aspect, which is really the most important aspect, and get that trajectory right.
Yeah.
Cool. Tim Pargeter. Well, tough names today. How do you think Elon Musk's neural link will change human physical performance and capability?
Mm.
So I don't know anything about it other than what he talked about on the podcast with Joe Rogan. From what I can hear is some shit's going to change in the future. That is for sure, because there's crazy stuff coming.
So maybe just explain what the Neuralink is for people.
Man, I have no idea what it is really, but it's they're saying that he's basically going into people's brains and is fixing things that have gone wrong in the brain. So he described there's like circuit breaks happening in your brain, which cause all sorts of issues, which might be like memory loss or just like different losses of capacity that can come around from issues in the brain, and it's fixing them. And fixing them permanently and even potentially going beyond that into upgrades in the system.
Yeah, so how he described it is basically going with a robot, they would cut a small piece of your skull out, they would put in basically like a microchip, insert electrodes into your brain. From there, those electrodes would stimulate different areas of your brain that you have, yeah, like Raf said, some kind of dysfunction in. So some of the main things that these will show up with would be things... outside of aging, so you would have like, you know, car accidents which involve like loss of hearing, loss of eyesight, loss of motor function, so paraplegics, quadriplegics, the Neuralink would ideally resolve those things. So you know someone can't use their arms and their legs, it would restore that function, so you would have someone fully walking and moving around again, which is obviously absolutely bananas if they can pull that off. And then you'd be fixing things that are related to aging, so like dementia and Alzheimer's, so you'd be fixing those sorts of things as well. And then obviously he said that, you know, that's where it starts, and then where it's going to get to in the future is obviously implanting something much bigger and focused more on taking someone from baseline to extreme levels. And that would be sort of integrating a bit more with AI. So it's pretty interesting. In terms of human performance, look, I think if you implant some kind of AI into your head, and, you know, he was saying, oh, we won't need to talk to each other anymore. We would just literally communicate on like a cloud sort of highway system. It's really a matter of how long it will take before, you know, how do I say this? Like, right now, we can't comprehend what it's going to be like. We don't have the brain capacity. We don't have the brain power to comprehend what we will be able to do. So even someone who comes up with the most incredible explanation, story, and fantasy of what things will be like, it'll be so many million times more incredible than that, that there's no point even discussing it. That's how far off it will be. It's something that's completely out of our realm of thought, what we can create. So, who knows? I'll fucking get it.
I could 600 kilo deadlift.
Would you get it? Okay, so Neuralink comes out. It's like Tesla has released the Neuralink. It's fucking $25,000 for an implant. Go get it now.
I wouldn't be the first person to get it.
How long?
But I would like to be one of the early adopters.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, it goes back to all things in health and fitness, which is, I think overall, people crazy underinvest in their health and fitness. Like, hugely. Right? If this came out and it was like 50 grand, but it was like a 10, 20% upgrade in your brain permanently, that's like on the low end, right?
Yeah.
Of course you should spend that money.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're young, because you'll just make it back.
Yeah.
You know, in a lifetime of earning.
Oh, dude, you make it back in a day.
Yeah, like, it depends, you know, even if it's a small upgrade, though, you're going to make it back in the long run so easily if your brain is better. And I could just imagine people be like, it's really expensive. but I just think it's because I think in all things in health and fitness, I think people crazy underspend. If you compare it to like whatever they'll spend on a house, they go for like a better house, which is like $2 million more than the cheaper house they were also thinking of getting. Health and fitness is somewhere, particularly with these sort of upgrades. I would invest basically every dollar I had if it was worthwhile.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not. I'm all in on that stuff. Yeah, I'm not worried at all. Yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, you can be first. Vertix training. Thoughts on opening a new strength and conditioning based gym as stage 2-3 commences. So this person's name is Vertix Training. Probably sounds like maybe already got a gym or something like that, or a PT training studio. I think that if you were to look at, say, the last 10, 15 years, I do think this is, maybe not right now, but in this very near future, is the best possible time to open a gym. We talk about quite a lot on the In The Black, the business show at the moment, but it's a crazy good opportunity. I think you just got to be really smart about how you do it and you know, don't get in over your head with the finances side of things, but so many gyms are closing. You probably had to pick up a gym that's already got council approval and a fit out and equipment, crazy cheaper, leases are cheaper, everything is cheaper, and people still want to work out. So I think it's, you know, it's actually better than probably was a year ago.
Yeah, you've got a lot of opportunity here. If you just find the right pockets, obviously it's not going to be, I would not open a gym that's serving everyone. I would find a good target market and I would really go after them. And that's generally in this sort of climate, a target market that has good job security, has a good amount of, you know, disposable income to invest on their fitness and have a willingness to invest in their fitness as well.
Yeah. And another good question, kind of similar in the COVID environment, Margie Smile, top recommendations for cost-conscious optimal recovery modalities. It's a good question because this is an area I think you can, well, I mean, it's different to what I just said, but you can overspend very easily because there is a lot of very, very expensive recovery modalities that have maybe not questionable results, but just very small results in comparison to the essentials that are crazy effective and often not very expensive.
Yeah, yeah. So I would actually, for this particular question, I did read it earlier and I was thinking what the best thing could be here is, and actually we had a guest on the show that's coming out very soon, Dr. Kirk Parsley, who's an expert, he's a doctor and specializes in sleep. And actually he said something that just kind of rang really true. And he said, sleep is not a pillar in your health and fitness. He goes, sleep is the foundation in which the pillars are laid on top of. And I think that could not be more true. No matter how much training, no matter how much dieting and eating and
Theraguns.
Yeah, and sunshine and rolling and massaging, you know, and supplements you take, they do not, all of them combined, do not even hold a candle to sleep. You can literally sleep 2 hours less in that night and offset an entire day of good work. So I would recommend, in terms of recovery, and that's cost conscious, is just getting more sleep. If you can figure out a way to change up your schedule, change up your bedtime routine, it's as far as turning the lights off earlier. You don't even have to get blue light blocking glasses. Obviously, that's super helpful as well. Just turn the fucking TV off. Turn the TV off, put on a lamp, put on some candlelight, you know, open a book, drink some, you know, relaxing herbal tea or whatever, and get an extra 2 hours sleep. You know, 2 hours in bed every night, and you are going to smash all the recovery methods in the world that you could possibly pay for. Now, once you do those things, which, you know, 95% of people don't, you know, all the clients that sit in front of me that say, you know, I sleep incredible, then none of them sleep well. Everyone struggles with sleep. If you can just focus on sleep and you can get that right, you can save yourself a lot of time and money. But yeah, assuming that that's done in the future, there's only really a couple of things that I'd recommend, and, you know, Theraguns is definitely not one of them.
Yeah, if I was to look at what to spend, exactly, sleep is the biggest one. So I would probably spend money on something that is the biggest hurdle to you getting sleep. So for some people, that might be just getting their brain on board with how important it is. It might be like the whip band or whatever, so you can just track it. It might be like the blue light blocking glasses if you just love to always, if you're forced to be in blue light, which a lot of people are because maybe they drive home from work late, depending. But it could also be just like we've got the like light blocking especially called blinds, like blackout blinds.
Yeah, blackout curtains. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, they can be expensive, but I'm sure you can get pretty cheap ones as well. And if there's like tons of light coming in early, that could just be a huge upgrade to it. It could be air conditioning in your place. It could be lights.
It's not very,
not very that's cost conscious. Actually.
Could be lights that...
could be installing air conditioning in your roof, a full ducting system.
Could be someone that just pampers you and massages you overnight. Yeah. That's paid on an hourly basis.
Yeah.
But I would say, yeah, pretty much anything that... You know, honestly, yeah. It could even be like a ZMA supplement or something from True Protein. Anything that improves your sleep is usually going to be your best spent money.
Yeah, I mean, if you just get every single one of our sponsors, you're sorted. It covers all your bases. Cool. What's the next question?
That's it.
That's it. All awesome. Right, guys. Guys, thanks for the question. You are sending in some dope questions. And yeah. As a way of saying thank you, so a lot of people have wanted the restock of the training journal. I actually found like 5 or 6 boxes of training journals, so we don't have to get them printed again. So we're trying to run out the last training journals. So I just thought, fuck it. We're going to give the training journal away for free. A hardcover to anyone that leaves us a review. So all you guys have to do, if you leave us a 5-star review on wherever you can do it, iTunes or on the podcast app, then leave us the review, take a screenshot of it, send that screenshot to media@themindmuscleproject.com and we will send you back a code that gives you a free training journal. All you have to do is just pay for shipping. But yeah, as many training journals as you want, you can get those for free. So we do have limited stocks, so check it out. So yeah, and thank you to anyone who does leave a review. We do really appreciate it. Cool. So yeah, obviously, Raf, you mentioned the blue light blocking glasses. I'm wearing mine right now, my daytime ones. I actually got a question from someone that wanted to know about, he's like, look, I can't really afford both. So would you recommend the daytime ones or would you recommend the nighttime glasses? What's more important? And it is quite a good question. So my first answer was a question back. I said, how often do you sit in front of a screen? I think the answer was somewhere around 5-6 hours a day. And I thought, look, the truth is I feel like you can get away with some screen use without glasses. Of course, we've been doing it for a very long time. I just think that the long-term consequences of a lot of screen use without the protection of these glasses, we will be paying for badly in the future. And there's some early research coming out showing the deterioration of the structures in the eye of overexposure to artificial light. And I just think that, you know, 20, 30 years from now, it's going to be one of those situations where people look at an office and they go, yeah, screens are bad. And there's like actual government law and regulation, like there is on construction sites, like there is in labs, in science, you know, you have to put protective wear, whether it's, you know, certain screen covers or it's, you know, glasses before you use computers. So just stuff like that to preserve your eye health. Because last thing you want to do is have your eyes... It's one of those things, you don't know what you've got till it's gone, right? And until your eyes start to deteriorate, you're like, oh shit, I took my eyesight for granted. So daytimes will really help with that. I think if you're doing 12-hour days in front of screens, daytime ones might be more important. But really the immediate benefit you'll find, and obviously all the benefits of sleep we just talked about, I think you're better off getting the nighttime ones. So for most people, if you can only afford one or the other, I'd recommend the nighttime glasses, the full orange ones, and then obviously any stylish frame that kind of suits your style.
Yeah. And one day, it's not yet, but one day you'll be able to go out into the future, wear orange glasses, and no one will laugh at you. We're not there yet.
Not there.
But I truly believe we've been trying for a while. The future will get there.
Yeah. So blueblocks.com, and you guys can use the code MMP to get a discount. So it's blublox.com. Okay. So Netflix, we've got two different ones. I've been watching something separate to you, Raf. Mm. Obviously, everyone's been watching The Last Dance, but we will get to that when it's finished, like we promised. One thing I'd actually been watching, one of my favorite subjects to learn about is World War II and World War I. I just find them, I've always been into history, any type of history, to be honest. I really enjoyed it at school. I did ancient history. I loved studying Egypt and the ancient Egyptians. I thought that was absolutely fascinating. I loved it. And I didn't really get to do a whole lot of modern history, but anytime, like my favorite genre of movies is sci-fi, but close second is war movies. I don't know, I just love them so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, I reckon my top 5 war movies, I've watched them all at least 3 or 4 times. Like they're, you know, if I just see it and I'm just in the mood, I'm just like, fuck, I'll watch it again. I don't care. And anyway, so Netflix brought out, so they had a series they brought out in 2009 called World War II in Color. So it was... They basically told the whole history of the world wars from start to finish, how it started and how it finished. And they did it all in, obviously, the black and white footage, but they expertly restored it in color. And it's funny because at the start of every intro, it's like this this World War II footage, like expertly remastered in color. And I'm like, the only color I can see is orange.
He's wearing the glasses.
Like in all different shades of orange, yeah, because I got the glasses on.
So good.
But anyway, they brought out a new series. So it's the World War II in color series, but this one is called The Greatest Events of World War II. So each episode of the 10 episodes is a very... Still in color.
Cool.
Yeah. But they did it a little bit differently. When they did... pretty sure when they did the World War II in color, they didn't do any interviews with historians. In this one, they have like 5 or 6 different historians. Really good, because they have historians, German historians, and they have English and American historians as well, because obviously history is told by the winners, by the victors, and everyone knows that. But it is nice to kind of hear the German, a modern German perspective on how it went down, because obviously the English are going to say things like, oh, it was such a foolish move by the Germans to do this. Oh, they so overestimated the power and the might of the RAF. Like, of course the British historians are going to talk positively about their own country. So it is nice to hear both sides of the story. So I give them credit for that. But yeah, they do talk about some really pivotal events in World War II. And I think what's great about this series is you do get to really understand what the implications were of very, very specific events, and how if it could really have tipped, you know, one way or the other, we could be speaking German. Mm. Like, it wasn't, like, when you kind of just think about it, it's like, yeah, we just kind of ground them out. It was a long war, but like, we were always going to win. It's like, when you get down to those narrow moments, dude, it was so close. Like, it was nail-bitingly close. The coin could have tipped either way. And sometimes it was just pure luck. Honestly, the tide of the war was just straight luck. And you think, fuck, how different the world would be if like that luck had not swung in that direction in that moment. Like, literally, they'll say like, oh yeah, this 4 minutes like changed the war, the direction of the war. Yeah. It's crazy.
And I think it's extra good because I think where we are at the moment with the pandemic and everything is probably will be looked back on one of the pivotal moments as well. So maybe the one that there'll be pandemic in black and white.
Like when we finally figured out 5G was the answer and we shut this cell towers down and we all survived.
Someone just turned it off. Turn off the 5G.
So yeah, World War II in color. I've got 2 more episodes to go. So I've watched 8. They're really good. So if you love that stuff, you'll definitely enjoy it. So I'm going to give it a... Can you give us one 4 out of 5?
Nice.
Yeah, definitely worth watching.
And I've watched American Factory. So it's a one-off show. I think it goes for about 2 hours. And it's got some... I saw that it had very high ratings before I watched it. So initially I was like, this doesn't look very interesting at all. And I think it kind of looks boring when you first look at it. American Factory, that sounds boring, right?
Mm.
And no one gets
super boring.
No one gets killed in it. So I'm like, why would I watch this? But it has 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Fuck, that's high.
So it's got crazy high ratings. So basically it's set in Ohio, which is like, it's like where a lot of the old factories, I guess the Rogue Factory, that's a new factory, but some of the old boring factories that didn't make gym equipment made like cars and
like General Motors.
Yeah. I think it was a General Motors plant that actually was there.
Mm.
Anyway, so they've been like long since shut down. So tons of people like lost their job and this type of stuff. And
is it a very poor state, Ohio?
Yeah, it is. And I think this area in particular is very poor because it was just like, you know, propped up by these factories. Everyone was factory workers and that factory is closed. And there's not much else happening there.
Yep.
So it's, you know, one of the particularly depressing white areas of America. This Chinese billionaire comes in and basically resurrects this, I believe it was a General Motors plant, and they start making glass for cars. So they've basically taken...
Like windscreens.
Yeah, like windscreens. Yeah. So they've taken this factory work that was happening
in
China.
Why in America?
They moved to America and they've rehired all the American workers. There were some benefits for the Chinese, I think, in terms of like distribution within America.
Right.
And like, I think the American government was super supportive of it because it was like, you know, bringing like thousands of jobs to the area.
And this is like the first time it's ever happened.
Yeah.
This is
the first time. Like, as soon as you can see how unique this is. It's like, you know, some Chinese name factory in America. Like, you never see that.
No, never. Yeah.
This is a brand new thing and it's Chinese bosses and it starts off super positive. But what is interesting about it is you just see this unbelievable just culture clash. You know, they're like, oh, you know, in China, like they all just work like 16-hour days.
Yeah.
Fine. And these Americans like, we're not working 16-hour days. Like, but why not?
What is your excuse?
Yeah, the clash is like crazy. And then some of the Americans go over to China to see them. And like the workers are just like so loyal. And they're like, you know, they start the day like soldiers. Like lined up, yelling. They go off to work and just like smash it for 14 hours and go straight back home and like get paid nothing. And these Americans are like, oh, so like how much sick leave? And like what about my health insurance?
So different.
Yeah, it's like it's crazy different. And it's just like really interesting. And then also, you know, even just the way the leadership is, like this Chinese billionaire, he kind of runs it.
You've already sold me on it. I'm going to have to watch it.
Kind of runs it a bit like a communist party, right? He's like, I'm the leader here. Like, I'll tell you what's happening. And like that's just not normally how things run in America. So this is such an interesting culture clash to watch. And I think that, yeah, like this is, you know, probably the future because China is doing far better than it seems than America at the moment. So this type of activities is going to be more and more. You know, might end up this type of stuff in Australia or other countries around the world. So it's a good opportunity to see what is coming in the future.
And what do you give it out of five? It's a movie, right? Or is it a series?
No, it's a, yeah, it's a one-off documentary, like a one-off two-hour documentary. I would say, given the topic sounds so boring, it's about a plant in America that makes car windscreens.
But right? Surely it's so relevant right now with the trade wars and stuff.
Exactly, it is. So no, but like no interest. It's not like it's about squats and I'm like, oh, I'm really interested in this.
Yeah.
So given that, and I still watched the whole thing and thought it was really good, I would give it a 4.5 out of 5 just for like, that's a great effort. That's an incredible effort.
I was going to say, for you to finish a documentary that had nothing to do with training or fitness, like it's big.
Nothing to do with like anything I was really interested in beforehand. So yeah, great job.
Wow. Awesome. I'm going to check that out as well. So guys, thank you so much for tuning in today. Remember, you can go check out our dumbbell programs at themindmuscleproject.com/programs. All our other programs are on there as well. And then as well, if you guys leave us a review, a 5-star review, we will send you a code for a free training journal, as many free training journals as you'd like. Guys, thank you so much for tuning into the After Show this week, and we'll speak to you next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the Mind Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the Mind Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.